Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Josh Miller, and he'll be answering your questions on Euro nymphing. We'll talk about tips, tactics, and techniques. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Josh a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcasts sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have some time while you're listening to the show, feel free to do it. It'd really help us out and let other people know about great shows we have on Ask About Fly Fishing. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Josh Miller about Euro nymphing, tips, tactics, and techniques. The Colorado River at Lee's Ferry is called by some the world's largest spring creek. It's a massive, clear-running tailwater fishery that runs 15.5 miles from the base of the Glen Canyon Dam to the upper reaches of the Grand Canyon. At times, it gives the impression of being not one or two, but a series of parallel spring creek-like waterways. The fishing is great, and the scenery is gorgeous. Lee's Ferry Anglers provides professional guide service to this outstanding rainbow trout fishery, as well as food and lodging at Cliff Dwellers Restaurant and Lodge. See for yourself why Lee's Ferry is on every fly fisher's must-do list. Visit leesferryanglers.com or call them at 800-962-9755. Again, that's leesferryanglers.com or call them at 800-962-9755. Before we introduce Josh, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we will be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Josh's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Josh's book, Euro Nymphing, Tips, Tactics, and Techniques, courtesy of Stackpole Books. To learn more about Stackpole Books, the books and periodics that they offer, go to stackpolebooks.com, and you can find all that they have published out there as well. We also have a link to Josh's book, Euro Nymphing, on our homepage, so if you're interested in picking that up, if you don't win tonight, help Josh out, buy one of his books. I'm sure he'd appreciate it. Now, the way that we give away Josh's book is I'll be asking a question at the end of the show, and it'll be about something that Josh and I have talked about during the show. So you can use that form on our homepage, the same form that you can ask questions through during the show. Just put in your answer there and your name and your location, an email, and the first person that answers the question correctly will win Josh's book, Euro Nymphing, Tips, Tactics, and Techniques, courtesy of Stackpole Books. So pay attention, take good notes, and maybe you'll be the proud new owner of Euro Nymphing. Our guest tonight is Josh Miller. Josh was a member of the Fly Fishing Team USA from 2016 through 2020, and he recently coached the U.S. youth team to a gold medal in the 2023 World Championship in Bosnia. He has competed in the regional and national competition circuits and has assisted in coaching four World Youth Fly Fishing Championships. Miller is a full-time guide and traveling instructor and is a signature tire for Orvis, Fulling Mill, and others. Josh endorses Thomas & Thomas Rods and Scientific Anglers, and he lives with his wife Sarah and son Jonah in Western Pennsylvania. Josh, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you, Mr. Roger. That was, man, just right off the bat, that was quite a introduction to your podcast. Man, I don't know what you've done in your lifetime, but Dang. Even I was interested in listening. It's back to
Well, yeah. Well, you can listen to the recording within 48 hours.
I heard about that too.
And,
Yeah.
and
Thanks
it'll
so
be
much for
you.
having me.
And it'll be you.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been doing this since 2006. I was literally within a week of being the first podcast, and we didn't call them podcasts back then. But so I've been around for quite a while and done quite a few shows. I think their next show will be 400 shows over the years. So, but
Wow.
yeah, we have a good time here, and I know we'll have a good time tonight as well, talking about your own nymphing. So let's just start out, Josh. And I know in your book, you know, you started out by asking the question, you know, what is your own nymphing? And I remember I was trying to think of when I can look this up while I'm talking here. But, you know, one of the first shows I was doing was, I think, 2008 or something like that. I'll look it up here in a second. But a lot of years have passed since the kind of the word was out about your own nymphing. And the I remember one of the first competitions was just outside of Boulder, Colorado, when things got started. But yeah, let's see here. So the first show I did was 2006 with Jeff Currier, European
Jeff,
Fly
yeah,
Fishing
great guy.
Techniques.
Yep,
Yeah, and
Jeff's a
then
great guy.
we've done many shows since then with Jonathan White, Devin Olson, George Daniel, Matt McConnell, Lance Egan. George Daniel again. So you're in company with some great fly fishers, and I'm sure a lot of those are your friends as well. But yeah, so, you know, I mean, it's gone by a lot of different names. In fact, John Murphy kind of introduced us to this question. He wrote in and says, I read about all these different styles or types of Euro nymphing, Czech, Spanish, French, which makes the subject seem so complicated. What is your preferred style and why? So there, using that question, introduce us to Euronymphing and maybe throw in some history there, too.
For sure, yeah. And I think it's important to know history and to know to kind of lay down some foundation, who are people that started things or at least brought them here or then pushed them further. And sometimes that gets lost in translation, and sometimes the technique changes and evolves as it moves throughout the country, which it should, and it's cool. But before I answer any of these questions, I just want to talk real quickly about how I answer my questions. You know, anything we ask tonight, any of the questions, any live brought in that we appreciate and that we're thankful for those questions. But I'm looked at as maybe someone who knows what I'm doing. But to be honest, Mr. Roger, I am just learning every day as I go. And, you know, to me, like, that's the biggest thing is just keep on trying to seek more knowledge and information. And so that being said, my answers change over the years. They change, you know, and things, you know, grow with us, and that, it's just cool. And a lot of the answers are ways that I look at things, you know, and regionally, nationally, worldwide, maybe specific techniques are going to be a little different for the fisheries or for this and that. But, you know, kind of just having that in the back of your mind is kind of, you know, I'm a central Pennsylvania guy, but I fished all over the world. And, but I really, you know, just guiding today on central PA, our weight of flies might be different than your average weight in Colorado during runoff season. You know, so just those things in mind are, you know, can definitely play a factor on how we approach stuff and at least our starting point. That's kind of the way to say it. But with the history of Euro nymphing, the history of tightline nymphing or Czech nymphing, Spanish nymphing, you know, it's pretty cool being able to have been in Bosnia and Poland and in Czech Republic and just those Eastern European countries and fishing with some of those older anglers and seeing kind of how they fish and how their technique, at least them telling me how, you know, they've evolved to different leaders or different weights of flies or different thought process. But it kind of was confusing to me too when I heard about all the techniques back then. I'm like, what's the difference between Czech nymphing and Spanish nymphing and, you know, long line versus short line versus heavy flies and heavy leader or more upstream or more this and that. But, you know, not to hurt any feelings or to water anything down or to hurt the past or history or however it is, I kind of consider them all one. And that, you know, to be really efficient at all rivers and wherever you are, it's good to know a little bit about lots of techniques to fish instead of just pinpointing and say, oh, I only do this style or that style. And maybe those styles, you know, I'm not from the Czech, I don't know exactly, but maybe that style has changed over the last 20 years too. So I try not to be very specific in that way. I just try to, you know, I'm fishing flies with long leaders. That's kind of just how our tight line nymphing, you're a nymphing. Does that kind of answer that question a little bit?
Yeah, and I think that's why we all love fly fishing too, is because it's always changing. There's always something to learn. It's never boring, right? Never boring.
I love it.
And it's always poses, you know, the next question. Well, why didn't that work today? Or, you know, what's going to work tomorrow? Or because even though it's worked in the past, it may not work the next day. So we have to learn again. And the fish don't always cooperate either, right? No matter what you do. So
absolutely true.
I think some of those names too, and correct me if I'm wrong, but some of those names like Czech nymphing or Spanish nymphing were just names that maybe American fly fishers brought back saying, hey, well, I learned this over there, so it must be Spanish. Came from Spain, become Spanish. But I think you're right. There's a lot of the techniques kind of meld together, don't they? And it's interesting. And then this brings up a friend of the guy that I learned to fly fish with and tie flies with when we were in junior high school. Later on, when he started fishing streams, he was just straight line nymphing, you know, on the bottom with no indicator or anything. I go, what are you doing? You know, and he goes, well, I'm just nymphing on the bottom. And so, you know, he didn't even know what he was doing. But back then it was a version of contact nymphing, right? No indicator, no suspension device, no nothing. So, it all kind of melds together, I think, as you said. So do you, you know, you said things have changed. They've changed for you. What have you seen? And I don't know exactly when you got started. I know you were like, well, you probably start kid to me, but you were just a kid when you started in the competition arena, right? I mean, weren't you, how old were you when you got started in that?
I'm 35 now, and I've helped with the U.S. youth team for at least 10 years. I was competing well before that, probably in the early, maybe 2010 or 11, and I was tight lining many years prior to that, and it was something kind of, you know, I saw just these fish in a hole, and I was fishing, and I was like, man, there's got to be a better way, and truthfully, I had a bunch of cider material. I didn't have a really good fly line that floated back then anyways. It was just so, you know, I was just didn't have money to put in anything. My family didn't either, and I just put a piece of white backing on my through my leader, and it was just a different way to. I was actually floating it on the surface. I wasn't tight lining. I was just watching the cider or the backing, and I was floating like, and I was catching fish like that. I lifted up and caught more. And just I literally remember the moment. I remember the day. I was probably in the low teenage years. And I was just like, dang, this is cool, man. But like it's
yeah.
There. And I went back multiple times and I couldn't catch them. And but when I went to that, and I remember running to the fly shop and was like, you know, what kind of flies? And just then I was like, these beaded head flies seem to sink. And I was like, I didn't even know about tungsten then. But it just kind of it just absorbed me. And and it's changed my life ever since. But it's cool. That's why as a guide or an instructor or whatever, I take what I do so intensely serious in the way that if presented proper to the angler, this can change someone's life and it could save someone's life, you know, and it saved mine, you know, and I just think it's such a blessing, this sport and everything about it. It's just great because it really put my path into play. You know what I mean? That's why I'm here talking to you about crazy.
Yeah.
Thing,
What has changed over the past, let's say 15 years? Sounds like you've been involved with it since then. What has changed for you in your own nymphing that you've seen?
Sure. You know, there's been physical technique that has changed. There's been physical gear that has changed. There's been, you know, leader weight, sagging heavy leaders and using lighter leaders, now being able to fish farther distance, more sensitivity, the rods that now match with casting lighter leaders, in my opinion, better. The compact intensity of flies, tying tighter nymphs that sink, you know, that kind of stuff. That to me is very important, don't get me wrong. But to me, what really has changed, especially the last year, is really focusing every single cast on what my purpose is for that drift and how to accomplish that instead of the other way around. People say, well, I thought the cider needs to be like this. It's like, no. Don't worry about what the cider needs to be like. Worry about what you want your fly to do, and that correlates with how your cider and how the fly enters the water, what you do immediately after. Like all that stuff, I think people might look at it backwards sometimes, You know, it's like the guide saying mend instead of saying the fly needs to slow down. That now you mend because you know it needs to slow down. What we need to know is what we want our fly to do and how we want to present it to the fish, and that will change how we fish. You know, that's like really what's changed my mind, and that's been the biggest thing for me. It's what's your purpose. Every day, every cast, what's your purpose? What's your purpose? What's your purpose? Not, it's this angle or it's that, no. Like, why is it that angle? Because there's a reason, or there's, you know, maybe that fly, you know, because this is what happens to a lot of, even me too. You know, like, I go up to run, and I put my tippet on, I put my single fly, and you find it's this medium angle, and you catch, and you're like, dang, I figured it out. You know, that's the most twisted mind thing to think. You actually should say, ooh, okay, now why is that working, and what is my fly doing? Because then you get to the next run, and that length of tip and that weight of fly doesn't work anymore, and you're doing that same angle again. You're like, oh, man, what, the fish aren't eating anymore. And no, you just need to change your angle or something that we don't know. You know, but that's the point. We need to know what the purpose is of each drift, and then we understand how our tool works, and we can manipulate our tool to a high degree. I'm getting deep quick because I love it. I'm going to
What I'm hearing is you weren't, you know, what changed for you was the way you think. And not, you know, what kind of, you know, whether you use orange, green, or purple cider material, it's more how you think. And then that determines maybe what equipment you might use, what cider, what line you might use, how you approach the different stuff.
For sure. Yeah, that stuff's all important. Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, that stuff, leader weight and all that is important, but I just have a greater purpose for each drift and a very executed technique, but also a pinpoint, try to be very accurate on what, like we saw it today when I was guiding. I was in central Pennsylvania. And if you were the fish, sometimes, at least with my, remember, like with my technique, with my mindset and my approach, you just absorb that. But in that situation today, if an angler was just a little sloppy with how the fly landed or how their tippet landed, just with where the fly landed, maybe it didn't just have connection instantly or just a little bit of sloppiness, the rod angle was a little sloppy, dude, maybe Ken Drift's fish would need it. I'd say just stop your rod just slightly early and just have that rise it just 3 inches, and they'd do it and immediately catch a fish. And it just proves to me sometimes, at least with my technique, how, like, specific those fish can be when they're not actively moving to eat the fly, or you don't have the right fly, which that's a whole nother rabbit hole to me. But, you know, I try to just, you know, sometimes the fish, at least with the techniques that I present to the fish, sometimes they could be very small margin for error. That's a good way to say it.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, Josh, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll dive into gear. Sound good?
Perfect.
Okay. Let's see here. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call, and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. Again, the uglybugflyshop.com or 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Josh Miller about Euro-nymphing tips, tactics, and techniques. If you'd like to ask Josh a question, just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Okay, Josh, we did get a couple questions. And Phil McCartney wrote in, he says, tell us about that brown trout in the photo. When, where, and how did it end up having its photo taken?
I don't remember which photo I sent you.
It's got a rock in the background, some grass on the right. The fish is right up front. You're a little out of focus. You got a gray hat on.
I think that might have been Montana or Wyoming. I don't remember which fish it was specifically, but it could have been one of those. Man, I just love fishing out. I love Pennsylvania, but man, I just love every trip I get to experience out west. It's so, so amazing out there. If anyone's the edge, just like, man, maybe I'll go someday from the East Coast, just do yourself a favor. If you love fly fishing or you just love the outdoors, you just got to go out west. You know, it's
Yeah,
just great. But
it's, well, everywhere is beautiful. They've all got their pros. I don't really say cons because, every place is beautiful, and fishing is fishing. So how can you go
that's
wrong?
right.
So I always ask my guests at this point in the show, Josh, what's going on in your fly fishing world? So, you finished your book recently, and we know where you're guiding, and I'd like you to share your website or how people get a hold of you. But tell us what's happening in your fly fishing life right now.
Yeah, I feel like I'm flourishing right now in the sense that like I am on the river every day. I'm guiding every day. I'm actually in my van right now in State College, but I was had a great guide trip today, guiding tomorrow and until mid-June here in PA. I have some clinic in South Dakota in a couple weeks. I actually had a clinic in Colorado a month ago.
Oh, really?
But
Oh, sorry I missed
yeah,
you.
it was great. Yeah, it was great. But I just am immersed in fly fishing. I don't know where my path leads in life. I don't know where my end goal is, and I don't really care. I just like going with it and just enjoying the ride as I go, and I'm meeting the best people, and I'm just extremely blessed and just very thankful for everything. That's kind of just my life. I'm just living it every day and doing my best. I do have a beautiful son at home. He's just turned 3. It's very hard on me sometimes to be away, but in those moments, I remember that he's there. So I do my best. I work my hardest every day to do my best. So I'm always just kind of pushed by him more than I used to be to, but
Yeah.
yeah, I
I
love it.
know.
But before
I
we go
know
any
the same
farther, I
mate.
just want to go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying before we go any farther, I just want to say thank you for having me on here. I know we thanks at the end, but thank you now. I appreciate it. I'm having a fun time, and I
Good.
hope people enjoy it too.
Yeah. I noticed that your son was fly fishing before he was even born.
Yeah,
First
he
picture in your
does.
book, I'm going, here's my wife, Sarah, and our son Jonah finding a rainbow trout. Well, there's only one person visible in the photograph. And then there's a little baby bump happening there. So, yeah, that's a picture you'll cherish for your whole life right there,
That's right. That's right.
And yeah, that's cool. Now, is there a website address you want to share with people, or how do they get a hold of you for like guiding and so forth?
Yeah, for sure. I'm pretty easy to find just my name on Google, but the guide service we are is troutyeah.com. And then I have like some
Troutyeah.com.
personal,
Okay.
yeah, then I have a personal, I think it's Josh Miller Fly Fishing. And it's pretty sure it is. But yeah, but just troutyeah.com is my information on there. And after this podcast, if there's any questions or anything or concerns, comments or whatever, that's how we learn, and me included, just feel free to send me an email or call or text.
Yep, great, great. Okay, good. Let's jump into to talking about gear and kind of lump some of these together. We had a question from Roy Fukushima, Gary Kaufman, Rod Sato, and they're all asking kind of the same question here. So maybe you can work this into my question about rods. But, they're all, there's a lot of people out there on the fence like, okay, yeah, you're on nymphing. I hear a lot. I have to buy another rod, another reel, some more line, da 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 da. Is there a way for me to enter this to kind of try it out before I, commit financially? So can you maybe speak to that first, and then we can kind of talk
Yes.
about the optimal rods that we might like to have someday for your own nymphing?
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of these technical questions, if you ask 100 of the best anglers, they're going to give you 100 different answers, and same with technique. But that's why I really have been absorbing and really pushing like the purpose, because I've never heard people talk about that. That's, but that makes the most sense to me. And that's what makes me catch the most fish. But for techniques or for, rods and that stuff specifically, whenever my anglers come to me and my new students and they say, hey, I want to go tight lining with you, or you're tight, you're nymphing, whatever, and what rod should I buy? I say, don't come to me first, fish with me, get some good education, see if you like it first. That's 100% my first recommendation. Just go with someone that can teach you about it and can teach you well about it. Then you have the right fundamentals and the right knowledge to have someone you can personally ask and just trust their opinion too. Then you already know how to use the rod, because it is a little, it can be fumblesome. You put a light leader on a long rod and cast like a normal fly line, and in 1 second you're going to take that back to the fly shop and be like, this sucks, this doesn't work, but with a little bit of education, a little bit of knowledge on how that fly rod works and how that leader casts with specific or different casts that are not normal to traditional fly line, it's not that hard to at least get going with it.
So can a guy take a 9 foot six weight rod and begin to Euro nymph with that and with the line he's got to try to, you know, figure it out from there?
You absolutely can. And you can also walk across the country. There's just better tools for the job. It will work, and you can, and I have. When I started, I had a 9.5 weight Scott rod. That's what I tightline with. My first dedicated rod was, I think, a Graze and a Cabela CZN a long time ago, and, you know, they worked. And then I slowly upgraded to better and better, and when my technique and purpose changed, then I noticed why I liked a rod different than others and why some worked better for me than others. But if you don't know what you're trying to do, and you might not understand that some of these rods with just a really, really soft tip can cast a really lightweight leader with a lot of power, very, very, with very little movement at all. But it's a very stiff rod, does not load that light leader really well at all. So then you have to revert to different casts, and then you're tangled in the trees. So there's definitely, you know, I like to do a lot of parables in my fishing when I'm with clients. It's like, you know, you don't want to travel across the country with snow tires, but what if it snows midway through? But I'd rather have, you know, high mileage tires and cross the country if I'm going back and forth. You don't want to use mud tires. You know what I mean? So there's just specific things that work better for specific techniques. And
sure.
You know.
So tell us then.
You can. Yeah. It's not preferred. So that's the answer. Yeah.
Tell us what the ideal Euro nymphing rod is.
Sure. So the ideal Euro nymphing rod is whatever rod you have to go fishing with. Whatever rod you can put in your hand and just get yourself on the water, that's the most ideal rod you can have. That it's the truth.
Okay, but
whatever
you
can afford.
I want...
I'm going to get your answer. Don't worry. Don't worry. But it's the truth. It's the truth. Whatever you can, because this is not a broadcast of selling rods. This is the truth of what people can afford and what people can do. It just is what it is. Because that's how I was when I was a kid. I could not afford anything. You know what I use today is a Thomas & Thomas 10 foot 9 inch 2 weight and 3 weight. That is the rod that I choose. That's not the one that is told for me to fish. That is the one that I want to use. And the reason why is because it matches with my extremely lightweight leader with extremely little movement and flicking. I would almost like a flick cast. That thing just shoots 20, 30 feet with very little muscle movement at all. I have a lot of YouTube videos. I film today. I'm filming over the next weeks. I'm trying to do a couple videos a week. And you'll watch you can't even see the rod move and I cast 20 feet. Like it's, but that gear mixed with how I do it with purpose and everything just matches well for me. Well, then some other rods, maybe with heavier leaders, will match better for that angler's casting. So, like,
you kind of broke up like there.
What did you hear?
just the start of the first sentence you were just starting to say. So,
oh, sorry. Let me remember all that. So,
oh, no, I mean, just start where you're at now. You're fine.
Yeah. Oh, okay. man, now I'm all confused. But for me, like, a lot of anglers will say, you know, this rod is the best. And I take those things not with grain of salt, but I take them with, like, have you fished all of them? How are you fishing? Where are you fishing? Are you fishing with heavy flies? Are you fishing with light flies? Heavy leader, light leader? And the truth of this, the unfortunate truth that is just, I don't even like to talk about, is the truth of how many fish are caught or could be obtained. That's just, you know, I have to look at fishing at some extent as scientific. Like if someone says, you know, this is the fly, it's like, where's your data to back it? You know, I don't like saying it that way because it makes fly fishing numerical and it puts numbers on things, which just isn't good, you know, but it is true when you boil down to it. You know, so I don't like talking that way. Fly fishing shouldn't be always just about numbers and stuff.
So,
but at the end of the day, though, that is, it's factual. So that's what I'm trying to say. Facts are facts. You know what I mean?
Right. So, I mean, let's break it down. So we're looking for a rod of a longer length, maybe 10 feet plus to be ideal. Does it have a fast tip, a slow tip? Does it have, what are the, you know, without even specifying a particular rod, what are the general parameters compared to your, you know, standard rod we all use, the 9 foot five weight, right?
So how I like, what I like in a rod is 10 foot plus, 10 foot to 11 foot. 11 foot is just getting a little long for me personally. But I like 10 foot, 10 and a half. The TNTs are the 10 foot 9 inch. Those are seem to be in a sweet spot for me. I like a rod that is very fast throughout most of the blank until right when it gets to the tip and has an extremely soft tip. But just as important as everything is the recovery speed when you cast, how fast that rod goes back to its resting position. That's really important to me. Because when I'm fishing and I need just a dead stop after that cast, because I do not want wobble through my leader, because I am very, very much rely on visually seeing fish bite, that I don't want any extra wiggles in that, because sometimes those fish eat what we call reaction. That fly hasn't even sunk an inch and those fish are already eating it with less than a half a second. If you have any wiggles, it's hard to identify those bites. So that's kind of how I choose which rod to fish, yeah.
Okay. Now I was trying to find the page while you were talking, but it seems to me I saw a picture in your book, and maybe this is the back of your van with like 20 rods in it.
Oh yeah, no, that's
I look at that and I go, "Oh my God. Oh my God." I said, "This is scary." I mean, there's got to be, like $10,000 worth of rods sitting in the back of the van. So I'm assuming we don't need that many rods, right?
no, that's a picture of
No, no answer.
yeah, no, no. No, I have, for me, my arsenal was guiding aside, but like my personal rods for trout. I have the longer rods, and then I have more dry fly specific rods, which are still usually that 10 foot, 10 foot 4 weight, 10 foot 3 weight. I like fishing the longer rods for dry fly fishing too, and then a streamer rod and maybe a smaller rod just for kicks and giggles on a brook trout stream once a year. I could still use a long rod on a fair number of our streams here, not the really tight ones, but yeah. So I don't have tons of rods, truthfully, and then I have a couple saltwater and lake rods too. But yeah. That's more than most people probably should have. But,
No, what? Hey, we all have more rods than we need, really. But
probably, yeah. And most of
that's
them haven't
part of the
seen
fun.
water in years. Part of the fun.
But you don't want to give it up, right? Yeah. Well, you have somebody to give it to now. You have a young man that is going to need a few rods. So, yeah. So, what role does a reel play when you're on nymphing? Because we don't use the reel too much in the way of getting a line out or drawing line in, because you pretty much just have leader on the water most of the time, right?
Yeah. Sometimes there's times where we're doing other techniques like dry dropper with the Euro setup. I love Euro nymphing and tight lining, even though these two things are, I consider under that, but I really fish dry dropper and floating the slider almost more than I, not more, but equally sometimes, or sometimes more than like tight lining or nymphing. But
Right.
so sometimes line can be out farther. I can be fishing 30 plus 40 feet away sometimes. And obviously you're not still using the reel at that moment, but if you have that much line out, having a reel that free spools a little bit more so I can just like hit the cage and kind of pick up that line really quick is kind of a nice feature to me. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Instead of having to like physically wrap it, reel it each time around, you can just hit the spool and it just does five or six rotations real fast. That's kind of nice. The full arbor with the light leader is kind of necessary, because the full arbor keeps it caged in there so it doesn't jump off through the reel. And a nice smooth drag, so sometimes you hook a nice fish and you have a little, light tippet on and you just need it to pull out. But, reels are important, but I would say the rod's more important than the reel.
Right. You did
Yeah.
mention in your book about, you said you had some words about weight of
Yeah, balance.
the reel and the balance. Yeah, maybe you can talk to that, because that seemed to be something that was important to you.
Absolutely. And it changes, how heavy your reel is changes with two things, multiple things, but it really changes with how long your rod is. If your rod's 11 foot or 11 and a half, and it's, you might need a heavier reel, but it also changes with where you hold on the cork. And sometimes I hold so far back on the cork where like, I'm a little tip heavy, whereas if I just move my hand up a couple inches, it's balanced again. So, where you hold it can change maybe how adding a weight to your reel or whatever. But it is important to have at least a fairly balanced reel, where I'd rather have the reel be a little bit heavier and it wanting to lift versus the opposite, the tip wanting to fall. I don't want the tip wanting to fall because it's harder to, it's like longer to set the hook versus if the reel's almost pulling it just slightly ready to go, it feels like my hook sets a little faster. So that's kind of,
and you can adjust that. Yeah, and you can kind of micro adjust that with your hand on the cork then, you know, to
you
get
can
just
a little
the
bit.
Right balance. Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah. I do move my hand around and how I hold the, sometimes thumb on top, sometimes finger on top, sometimes finger on the side. And it actually, how you hold the rod changes your rotation or lack of rotation for your cast. It also, if you thumb on top versus finger on the side, actually changes naturally how high your rod tip is while you're drifting too. So, you know, just food for thought for people that are, do like this stuff a lot. That's, you know, something that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Question from William Henry in Brooklyn, New York, and I don't know where this is coming from, but he says, have you used semi-automatic fly reels? Is this something that's...
Yeah, they're kind of a... My dad had a Luger way back in the day I used to play with. It was kind of neat. You have to crank the side of it, and then you get a couple rotations out of it, and then you have to crank the spring again. And
right,
I had like this old broken fly line that was all you down to the core that we fished until there was nothing left of it. But I haven't fished one for, you know, that 20 years, and just recently one of the youth team members had one. It was kind of neat. It's kind of cool. But I don't personally...
Yeah, I don't know if those are... Yeah, I don't know if those are... I, like you, I mean, the first reel I ever had was a semi-automatic reel, you know, a little lever on it, and you put it, and then the line would come in. I didn't have any idea what I was buying at the time or anything, but I thought because he had asked the question, maybe it was something making a comeback or something, you know, in the fly fishing world
yeah,
that
I wasn't aware of.
But...
I think so, a little bit. There's a couple companies making it now. I know there's a couple companies over in Europe. A lot of the, maybe not a lot, but a couple of the key competitive anglers are using them, and it's neat that, you know, the good, there's a reason why some anglers use some things, you know, it works for them, but it's neat that they have influence on a lot of the fishing now. It's kind of cool.
Yeah Time to take a break, but I'll be back in just a few seconds, and we'll start talking about lines and leaders and knots. So hang tight, I'll be right back. Enrico Puglisi flies pride themselves with a unique and one-of-a-kind flies and fly tying material. Enrico has been experimenting with durable synthetic and natural materials to create flies that catch fish for more than 30 years. His innovative products, including brushes, fibers, and components, have made a major impact on the direction of saltwater fly fishing, and his methods and materials are respected worldwide. Whether you want your flies hand-tied for you or you'd like to tie your own, be sure to visit Enrico Puglisi Flies and browse through their online catalog. Visit epflies.com and do a little shopping today. Again, that's epflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Josh Miller about Euro nymphing tips, tactics, and techniques. If you'd like to ask Josh a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Okay, let's see. Let me just check in with those questions here, Josh, see what we can find. Oh, you had mentioned Western waters. A question came in from B in Phoenix, Arizona. He says, do you have any tips for Euro nymphing Western tailwaters? Anything specific about that since you were talking about Western waters?
Sure, yeah. Thank you for the question. I really enjoy fishing some of those Western tailwaters out there. And I won't say any ones in specific, but I'm thinking some of the Colorado one and some of the central kind of Wyoming one. And, yeah, I enjoy fishing those rivers. Some of them are weedy, and some of them are, you know, more different times of the year have more weeds than others. But if I can, I always try to choose water type that is appreciates my technique. So I know kind of where my technique flourishes, and if I have confined water on that river like that, that's kind of where I try to start first. But if I'm kind of stuck to certain styles, or if it's just open and big or flat or whatever, maybe I have to use more alternative techniques like dry dropper on the Euro setup or longer floating slider, or if I can get away with it, light flies, long distance, if there's no wind, you know. But I'm taking a lot of factors into consideration, like the conditions or what's going on. You know, wind is just such a big thing with, at least the way I like to approach rivers, wind is just can make a day difficult or frustrating, especially over here.
Really?
For me, I know. And when, you know, but the thing is, you know, there's techniques that kind of can get around that. But the way I like to fish, the way that like my technique really thrives over here on the East Coast, the wind can mess with it a lot. So maybe I'll adjust my go with a heavy leader or more bonus sider or more dry dropper to compensate for that.
Yeah, yeah. That was a question I had kind of skipped over at the beginning. Was from Gary Kaufman, where he said, what are the situations, conditions, stream size, flow that determine when you select your nymphing outfit versus traditional outfit? So you kind of were
For
just
sure.
talking about a lot of that. Yeah. Because you don't always have a choice, right? I mean, like you said, you may be doing dry dropper or whatever. It's what the water is and the conditions and the weather and everything is telling you as to what you are able to use, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Here today we had no wind. It was like the East Coast. We don't get nearly the wind like, every time I go out west, and I love it. And sometimes it's frustrating out west, but there's things like even I figured out. I use this thing called windy.com, and I'm like, it's going to be 40 miles an hour in this general area, but on windy.com I see the wind's going this way over this cavernous stretch of river. So if I go down in there, the wind, I'm like, oh, there's no wind down here. Yeah. So there's definitely like thoughts and ways that maybe some days kind of escape the wind, and then that technique that tight lining can be more productive. But yeah, a good angler is able to change his technique and catch fish with any condition, and sometimes that means maybe throwing a fly line or throwing indicators, throwing whatever it takes to catch fish. I'm not against anything, whatever works to have fun in that day.
Yeah, it sounds like you're very adaptable. I mean,
it's just supposed to be fun
and
anyway.
I think we, yeah. And it's kind of like, yeah, I haven't done that in a while. Why don't I try that? Maybe that'll work
Absolutely.
Today, right?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about, the type of line that you use. Again, what, the more optimal situation for if we were going to go purchase a line for your own nymphing, what are we looking for?
So for, yes, of course. So for fly line, we're using Scientific Angler, Monocore, Braidcore. For our leaders, I'm using a material called Pierre Sempe. It's just one continuous piece of pretty much fighter. It's like pretty strong. It's nice and stretchy. It's pretty cool stuff. And it comes from thick to pretty dang thin. Like today I was using 0.12 Pierre Sempe, which I think is like 6X from maybe 12 feet of that from, and then I had a butt section of 0.18. So, it's pretty thin stuff. Down to 6 and 7X tippet. So, and the fish, and of course that has to be accounted for the size fish and rivers you're fishing for. And water temperature, of course, too. But, over here, a lot of our fish is 8, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 inches. Biggest one we caught today was maybe 15 or 16, which is a great, beautiful wild fish for here in Pennsylvania. But that's kind of most of my leaders are pretty level, less knots. I had when I, and that's kind of the progression of my fly fishing 15 years ago. I always thought that I had to have a lot of knots and a lot of taper to get your fly out there. And maybe with the rods, maybe in the thought process, that was kind of how it worked. But, now you are flicking, not really casting as much, at least that's how I'm doing it. And I have fish level leaders that are very light, and I can cast them, get the fly where it needs to go very accurately and without very little sag. So that's kind of a way how this stuff has changed and adapted for us too.
Yeah, I mean, in your book, you've got leader formulas. You've got 6 different leader formulas there that you're using. Micro leader, lightweight, all-purpose, floating with cider, and so forth. Now, are you dialing back from that, from what you've just told me?
Those are good. Yeah, those are still good ones to use. A lot of times in the moment, I'm not changing leaders to go between floating the cider and dry dropper or this and that. I'm just using the common one that I'm using in that moment. Maybe if I know it's going to be super windy today and I'm on the bigger water or this and that, maybe I'll grab a reel that already has a different leader on it and start with that. But the cool thing is kind of those light leaders, you could still do a lot of good technique with. But, yeah, so I will change and adjust my leader sometimes. I will.
Now, what you had said, and you said it kind of fast and I didn't catch it, there was a specific name for the leader that you've been using?
Yeah.
Maybe you can spell it out for us.
I think it's P-I-E-R-R-E-S-E-M-P-I. Sempe, or S-E-M-P-E, Pierre Sempe. I know
Oh,
Big T Fly
Pierre
Fishing.
Sempe. Okay.
Yeah, Big T
Okay.
Fly Fishing in Georgia has it, and Devin Olson, Tactical Fly Fisherman,
Evan, yeah.
has it. Yeah, great people.
Yeah. Oh, well, in your book, you have Sempe Spirit. Is that what you're
Yeah,
talking about?
I think
Or is
the
it?
company might be called Spirit, maybe. I'm not sure. Some of that stuff's a little confusing. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't even know.
Okay. But that's
Yeah.
what you're liking right at the moment. And you said
I
it
do like
had
that stuff.
built-in cider, or is it just the line is colored, or what? Can you describe that a little bit in
Yeah.
more detail?
Yeah, the line is colored. It's pretty much like buying a real Rio spool, but it's way longer and it does not coil as fast. You know how especially like Maxima. Use Maxima, or you're running it through your fingers, or you're running through the same stretch through the rod tip over and over. It gets coily pretty quick. It kind of stretches out and then has those coils. Where this doesn't do that quite as fast. The downfall of these light leaders is they can break midway through the leader, or like if you do get in the tree, you can lose the leader in the tree, which is like really crappy because then there's a leader hanging in the tree, and we don't like that. It's like,
Right.
not great, not great. So there is some like negatives in that way too. So just so that's out there. But yeah, it's Pierre Sempe. Yeah, Spirit. I don't know if I think that might be the company or the manufacturer maybe.
Yeah. But I mean, maybe I heard this incorrectly, but when you were talking about it, did you say it had color in it?
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, it is a color. There is different colors like orange and chartreuse and pink, and there's like maybe alternating colors, just like normal cider. Sorry, that's what I was trying to explain. Yeah, but
But it goes through that changing color, or it comes in different colors?
it comes in different
Does it?
colors. The one I use is
Okay,
just
okay,
green. The
okay.
whole thing just green. Yeah,
Green,
I was trying to say,
okay.
like it's like a Rio cider or whatever. But it comes in, I think 100 yards and 150 yards maybe. So it's a lot more than just your 30 yards on a small spool. And they're still small spools, so you
Okay.
can still carry them with you in your waders, which is kind of nice.
Okay. So tell us, for an all-around leader setup, going down to the tippet, what can you walk us through how you would build that out for just an all-around setup? Nothing specific, but something you could use on a regular basis.
Yeah, so what I would use on a regular basis is, we'll talk pounds so it's not too confusing, because
Yeah.
that some of the diameter is confusing, even to me sometimes. But yeah, so I would start from my fly line when on a mono or a braid cord thin competition fly line, just a standard Euro nymphing line. I would start with maybe 10 feet of 8 pound, and then another 8 to 10 feet of 6 pound. That could be Maxima, that could be Pierre Sempe, preferably Pierre Sempe. And then you don't have to add a cider to it too, because it is cider and it's colored. And I really like it
Yeah.
for when I'm doing floating the cider, because then it's easy for the angler to track to see that whole leader pretty fast too. And if I'm floating different various pieces, well, if I'm floating longer pieces of it, sometimes I'll actually watch what I call is the tail, is the part where it's coming out of the water up to my rod tip. So if I lose it in the glare upstream, I can actually watch that piece. And because it's all cider, I actually can watch that there and catch fish too. So, there is benefits to that too, long cider. But also, you gotta think on glassy, clear water. If you're throwing a 20-foot cider on the water, you might spook fish too. So every good thing has a downfall too.
Okay. And then from there you go to, you
My
said
tippet.
eight, okay, and are you using fluorocarbon in most cases?
Yeah, so you use fluorocarbon. So eight foot of, or 10 foot of 8 pound, 10 foot of 6 pound, and then I add my tippet to that.
Okay. Now you are not adding any other cider material then to your setup. Like some people have a Curly Q cider in there kind of thing. It's just the leader itself is giving you the indication of, what the fly is doing.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay. You want to talk about
Oh, no. I mean, leader,
that anymore?
I could talk about leader for hours. The difference between leader weight, castability, or just longevity. Leaders that, like they said, they're the ones that curl and get frustrating, tangle, and then, but these leaders being light can wrap around your tip a lot too. But the real difference between why I'm using heavy leaders versus light leaders is if I want to do a technique where I'm holding the leader off the water, the heavier the leader is, the more tension it's going to put on your nymphs. You know, so if it's 20-pound leader and you want to fish far distance, but you want to lift it out of the water, your leader, it's just going to pull your leader. It's too heavy. You know, well, then you have to compensate with a heavy nymph. And my thought process, what makes me tick as an angler is a lot of my purpose for when I'm fishing is to fish the lightest fly as possible because of the descent. The descent is extremely important to me. How the fly is falling towards or into where it's going to get to is very important. You know, anglers, especially here on the East Coast or whatever, come to me and they're like, dude, I heard you got to, like, get it down now. You got to be down now. Sometimes you do need to get down now, but today we proved it time and time and time on how those fish would eat a fly that was gently falling into its position, and they eat it right, like, very quickly versus a fly that got down right away. So, you know, having that in mind now changes how the leader I choose. You know, like I said, your purpose changes your gear. It changes, you know, because you understand tools. You know, a carpenter knows how to use his hammer, and, you know, I can twist my hammer this way and hit whatever, you know, whatever it is, you know the ins and outs of your tool, and you know how what your purpose is now. Does that make sense? I'm trying to bring it back around. Like,
oh, yeah, you know. No, it does, because like the example you talked about today, your client that you were fishing, what made me think is, okay, you got a lot of variables. You know, how deep is the water? Where are the fish holding in the water column? What's the temperature of the water? You know, are they near the surface or down deeper? And all of that could, you know, relates to what you just said about how fast that fly gets down. Maybe it doesn't Absolutely. Have to get down that fast. Yeah, yeah. No, all that makes good sense. Yeah, yeah.
I want every angler to, sorry for interrupting, but I want every angler to literally grab their nymph that they're fishing with, hold it in front of them, and drop it, and count how fast it hits the bottom. That's number one. I want everybody to do that. It's so important to understand what your fly does, and without just thinking what you know what it does. You got to actually know what it does. You got to actually see. And the other thing I'm going to really try to encourage is to see how fast that fly hits that current and pushes downstream. The water hits your fly, even that small profile of it, even though it's falling, it still hits the tippet and it pushes it downstream. So connection is so important. Understanding how to obtain, gain, and keep tension is so important for bite detection.
Interesting. Yeah. Eric Norberg, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, right around the corner from you there. Josh, do you have any suggestions for other cider materials? I have a hard time picking up the colored mono. I have been trying backing tied with a barrel nut, and I can see it, but I worry about the added weight and or drag for my Euro system.
Yeah, my neighbor in Pittsburgh. I'm from Pittsburgh too, but great question. I'm so thankful for this question. This comes down, and the answer is probably something people are not going to like, but the answer comes down to mechanics of casting. And sometimes the glare just sucks, you can't see. But the truth of it is, I have anglers with this similar thing, or unless maybe you really just have problems seeing, you know, because that is a true thing too. But even my anglers yesterday, you know, came to me, they're like, dude, I never see my slider. He had a bunch of tags on it and all this stuff, which does add weight, and it does add sag, and sometimes that can be a hindrance. But when you have mechanics and when you have accuracy and you know where you're casting to, it shouldn't be nearly as much a problem. When I know where I'm casting to and I have mechanics that accompany that, where I'm casting up and lifting, and my sighter actually falls in my view. We call it a window. I tell my angler, I'm saying, okay, we know where we're going to hit because that's where we need to hit. We know our target because that's where we've already identified where we want our fly to go. So now what we're going to do is we're going to use these exact same movements every time we cast, these same exact mechanics. And when we do that, our sighter will come to our vision in that window. We will not search for our sighter. When you have accuracy and good mechanics, your sighter will go where it needs to go. That's that's the unhappy answer to this thing. But the happy answer is, like, Scopharis wax is a little brighter, and you can put that on there, and it does help to illuminate the sighter a little more, you know. But the truth of that answer is, you know, I'm telling you, I will go with a lot of people this year, and they'll tell me that, and I show them 2 seconds of casting. I'm like, oh, your slider literally, like, I see it right away. I'm like, yeah, it's because you're probably casting down, everything hits the water, and you're lifting, and you don't know anywhere where it's at. But if you cast and almost aim upwards and stop high and stop short of your cast, the sighter will fall a lot more in your vision. Like, just try to absorb that. But yeah,
Yeah, no,
it's
it
crazy.
makes sense. Yeah.
A lot of like what I want to answer in my book and a lot of things, it's so hard. It's like you got to see it on the water and you're like, oh, that makes total sense. Like, you know what I mean? It, yeah, but sorry.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like I do digital marketing for fly fishing companies, and people will talk about SEO. I want to get my site ranked, in the top results for Google search. And, what do I need to do? And I said, well, Google only has a little over 200 different variables that they use to determine where you place in the search engine results. And it's kind of like, what you've just described is kind of the same thing. Well, there's probably only about 200 variables that could play a role in a situation on a given day that could affect, how your fishing goes and what you do. I mean, there's all those little things, all those little things that add up to, success, right? If you can,
yep.
The more of those variables you can figure out, more success you can have. Yeah. Mark in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Oh, a bunch of PA guys here coming in.
Love it.
I've started using ceramic-coated 4X microliter line from Japan through Adams. It has improved my nymphing game. I was struggling and catching only about maybe one-third by sight. I am now catching two-thirds by sight, also known as, a.k.a. doubling my catches. And I don't use cider material, just white line. Why is there no North American companies offering ceramic coated lines like Adams? And then he additionally says, tips on floating the sighter. I've started using Solary's Buoyant Armor UV on my blood knots and it has made my sighter a lot more useful. So any comments on Mark's question?
Yeah. Thanks for the question, Mark. I heard of Adams and I've seen some of the comments online, and I've heard of friends using it. Personally, I can't comment on that. I've never used it. I do not know.
Okay.
I think manufacturers here in the USA, I think they try to do their best job with trying to bring out the newest and greatest stuff. And maybe some of that stuff is, don't mean to say a gimmick. Maybe it's not, maybe it's the next thing, but who knows? I mean, I almost like enough of us need to fish it and then say, this is sweet. You know, maybe it's the next thing. But thanks for bringing it to our attention. I'll, maybe seek some out and try it. But with floating the sighter, oh my gosh, I love floating the sighter. It's like I said, it's like my that and dry dropper. I just love dry dropper because you get them to eat on the surface. It's fun. And floating the sighter, I feel a little bit more, just happy because I can fish a little farther. And it's not. I don't want to say it this way. I almost can fish a little more lazy. I don't have to have my arm, crazy ways. It's just fun. The one thing you can maybe try is lengthening your tippet a little bit, and that can kind of encourage your sighter to stay higher. Pat Weiss, one of the greats of Pennsylvania, the greats of the USA, and greats of the world, incredible angler, he showed me where you use a little bit of, you have your sighter, and then you do a little piece of heavier tippet, and then your tippet on. Let me go back once. You have your sighter, and then you use the same piece of tippet at the end of your sighter, same diameter. So if it's 8 pound, use 8 pound, a foot of regular tippet or 10 inches, and then your tippet. So it maybe can help to securely float just that the terminal part of your sighter so you can see that a little better. But how you cast, the tension on lifting the tail or not lifting the tail will change how long your sighter floats, how your fly enters the water, where your slack is, like all that stuff comes into play a lot. How heavy your nymph is, of course, too. But I just want to encourage you to try to fish lighter flies with doing it and try to fish a little longer tippet, too. The longer tippet you have, kind of, you can lose control and lose connection. But, yeah, it's a great technique. And same with dry dropper. It's just a very fun technique, too.
Oh, yeah, I love that, too. I need to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about flies and finish up with some presentation ideas. So hang tight and I'll be right back. Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with the restoration of habitats like Wolf Creek in Idaho and Sands Creek in Delaware County, New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish in their habitats like peacock bass study in Miami, Florida. FFI serves as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish, to preserve and to promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying, and to help ensure future generations can continue to enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join Fly Fishers International as they work to cultivate conservation, education, and community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to their website at flyfishersinternational.org. That's flyfishersinternational.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, talking with Josh Miller about Euro nymphing. If you'd like to ask Josh a question, just go to our homepage, fill out that form, and send it in. We'll see if we can't get it answered. Okay, quick question here just came in. Josh, Brad, and Sanibel, how long is your tippet?
Great question. Thanks, Brad. The tippet kind of is determined on the technique I'm fishing. If I'm fishing float in the slider, I'll fish maybe a little longer tippet. And if I'm fishing a single fly or a two-setup rig, single fly, I usually fish between 2 to 3 feet with when I'm fishing two flies. I'm fishing maybe a little longer than that because of the distance between the flies. I try to keep around that 20 inches. So, you know, just overall, it's going to become longer. So that being said, I will adjust my technique and how much I allow the fly to sink. It was really cool today. The stream we were fishing a spot that was 3 feet deep, and we have wild brown trout, and there was no bugs hatching, no bugs. I mean, there were a couple, but we saw zero rises today. Water's still coming off of, like, our runoff. We had a crazy, like, 5 inches of rain a couple weeks ago that blew our rivers to absolute crazy high flows. But we made, like, 15 drifts in the spot. You know, I think we had a bite first cast. Drift, 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 drift. And I was like, you know, I know there's more fish there, so what do? We don't change the fly. We change technique. We change the way the fly is presented to the fish. That's just what we do. And I had the angler stop their rod really high, and to have the slider, so we had about 5 feet to tip it on. The slider was maybe 3.5 feet in the air. And I said, Lily, cast that fly as the fly hits the water. Don't just let it sink with slack. Control how it sinks and be tight the entire time. So what I did was I made him drop the flies and see how fast they sink. So then when his flies hit the water, he knew how fast they were sinking. I said, just go slightly slower than that so you have control as they sink. So he sunk it down about a foot or even less and immediately got smoked. Immediately, bang, crushed, caught it. And he was like, whoa, that was crazy. Did it again and caught like 8 fish there in just a few minutes, where we just fished for a couple minutes and caught nothing. But we held the flies higher. So, you know, I like to look at all the water I'm fishing, and I kind of go with, like, you know, if there's a hole that's 15 feet deep, obviously, you know, that's not, I'm not taking that in consideration. But to answer the question, I try to think of all the water I'm fishing and try to fish if I'm doing, like, just more of the tight line with just a nymph or two, one or two nymphs on, like, you know, a more vertical or lifted technique, not floating a slider. I'll try to fish, if the deepest area I'm fishing is 4 feet, I'll try to have 4 or 4.5 feet to tip it, and then I'll just elevate or lower my slider in the air depending on which spot I'm fishing. Does that kind of answer that question?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
Let's talk flies. How do you select the flies that go in your box for your nymphing?
Yeah, flies are important to me. Having weight of flies is really important to me. If you look at my box, it's going to be filled with waltz worms and France flies. That's just like the one and two fly of my confidence. And they will be tied in silver beads and copper beads. And they will be from 1.5 millimeter. So in Pennsylvania, man, the most I'm really ever fishing, I mean, I'll fish a heavy one. I am. But my average fly I'm fishing is 2.4 millimeter, 2.8 millimeter, and then sometimes I'm fishing 3.2. But I'm not too crazy often do I have much heavier than that on. But those two patterns are going to be what I fish 90% of the time here in PA.
Okay.
Short answer.
So that kind of answers that. The other question was John Ferguson in New York. What's your go-to fly? Well, he just gave you the two.
Yep, that's my one and two. I know I'm positive of this. I'm positive of this, that the fly matters. I'm positive that fish, there's times where, like, you know, you throw the bug that they're eating and they're going to go move for it. But for me, Josh Miller, right now, when I'm sleeping in my van tonight, I'm going to go guide tomorrow, and then I'm going to go to South Carolina, or I mean South Dakota. We're going to go fish a world championship in Czech Republic this year. I'm going to coach a world championship, and then we're going to go back, and then I'm going to go to New Zealand, and I'm going to go to Hawaii to fit, and then I'm going to there. And then I do not look at that specific of tomorrow on Penn's Creek. The bug is going to be just a little bit off of green here, and then over there it's just a little different, because we tied fly specifically for a world championship. All these blue owls, we get over there and the blue owls tan, we're just like, ah, you know what I mean? So it's like, I do not get wrapped up in that, because it's going to absorb too much of my time. It's too many flies to care about. It's too much. There's going to be anglers that are sad at me saying that, but for me, it's just not my thing. I don't enjoy tying flies. I don't enjoy creating flies and matching the bugs. I don't like it. It's just not for me. I enjoy fooling a fish with an incredibly high amount of technique-based things, as in how the fly enters the water, adjusting slack versus no slack, driving my drift or letting the drift go naturally, changing my angle, shallow, medium, deep, Colorado drift. Just there's so many things that I do. We prove it time again. We fish and then we just lift our sighter higher, and we immediately catch a fish in the same old swarm or the same France fly.
Yeah.
Bugs matter. They do. But for me, I'd rather just try, if I can, to manipulate my technique on a high level or a very purposeful level and catch fish. That's the truth of me.
For all these fly tires out there.
I know.
For all these fly tires, I'm going to hit you with a whole bunch more questions, because you're not going to get off that easy. All right, so what makes a Eurofly a Eurofly, and what makes it different from, like, standard nymphs?
I don't want to say there's really different, besides that, you know, it's created in a way to be fished on. Well, no, Euronymphs can be fished on an indicator. It's perfect. Euronymphs fish under a dry dropper. Euronymphs can be swung. It's fine.
Yep.
So I don't know. I dislike saying there's a difference, but, I mean, a lot of them are tied on jig hooks or with jig beads or with tungsten. I use some brass bead flies, but very, very little. You know, 99% of them are going to be tungsten flies or more weighted flies. But yeah.
Are most of your flies attractors, or are you trying to match the hatch?
Neither.
Opposite.
Neither. I'm looking for...
Opposite, neither.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not trying to specifically... I'm trying to just give flies that are close. You know, a Waltham is close. It's a little bug that could look like a caddis. It could look like a nymph that the tail fell off and broke off on.
Right.
You know, it could look like just a grub that fell in. It could just look like something. That's all I'm trying to do, is give them something. A fish that's spooked in a tailwater that just got fished 97 times, maybe this isn't the technique that's going to get those fish. Might not be, you know. This is the technique for our spring creeks and our limestone or our freestone rivers that are maybe a little bit quicker moving, and you can stay behind the fish and they're not maybe a spook. That's really where this technique can flourish. But yeah, I just try not to get too overwhelmed with my nymphs. I will prefer, I forget what angler said it to me, a great angler I look up to, but he's like, you know, the more bells and whistles you put on the fly, it gives the chance for fish to say no to. It's just more things. Whereas I would rather throw that nymph that won't spook the fish, but if it gets to them, will eat it, so I can adjust my drifts many times, versus something that's bright and they see it kind of come down crappily first drift, and like, that wasn't normal, and they already spooked from that nymph.
Right.
Because the tractor flies, that's kind of what can happen with them. But then there's times where there's a crazy blue and yellow patch, and you throw something bright and crazy, and it's something that differs from all the bugs, and it can be very productive. You know, so it's important to have those flies too, but I like to do that very simple, basic, non-intrusive is the word, fly. It's non-intrusive.
What do we need to know about bead color?
I like to fish silver and copper beads. Today, in a lot of stuff, you know, they're just starting points, but I like, if the water has color, I like to throw the silver bead. If it's cold, that's kind of my attractor, that little bit of a flash maybe in the winter on a sunny day, but maybe the opposite on a cloudy day in the summertime. You might want copper. If fish are spooky, maybe copper. If fish are freshly stocked, maybe that silver bead. This is a nice thing. I remember we were fishing this one spring creek here in PA, and I had these great anglers I was fishing with, and we were getting them pretty good. And the fellow looked at me. He's like, "Do you think they're just eating this bead?" I was like, "Yeah." And I actually had a fly that fell apart. I said, "Well, I don't really want to do this because it stinks in a lot of ways." But he's like, "Let's do it." I said, "Okay." I put the fly on, and it was just a silver bead, and there's just a little bit of thread holding the hook on, you know, the bead in place, and it wasn't even in place; it was sliding on the shank. You know, he caught a fish second cast, and he's just like, "Man." I was like, "That sucks," you know. I'm like, "It does suck. It does suck." You know, but in that scenario, they're just eating the flash of just something coming through. But you know, there's times where that will spook the fish that little bit, or you need, you know. And I don't want to belittle fly fishing that much because that was just maybe one day. You know,
flies
matter. They do.
Now,
what
I'm,
you said? I'm gonna keep saying that flies matter, but not to me as much.
Okay. I'm gonna cut you short, Josh. I'm gonna cut you short. Because I got a couple more questions to go here. I'm going to jam them in here. Just rattle off a bunch of other flies that you would consider for your nymphing flies besides the two that, you know, the waltz worm
and sure.
France fly.
Pheasant tails, Frenchies, little stone flies, rubber legs, zebra midges, regular midges. I fish a lot of little midges. That's great stuff to have. You could fish that on tight lining too. The hare's ears. Rainbow warriors.
Okay.
There's a lot of flies, and you can change those flies to like France fly. You can tie in a bunch of different colors. So you can, you know, try to match a little more sulfur yellow or Hendrickson, or you know what I mean. So you can. Some of those are just basic and bland that you can kind of match things.
DB and Bozeman says, "Is the secret with." Paragon nymphs, their slender profile and the use of tungsten beads to get them down fast?
Yeah, they will cut the water for sure faster. Today fish were sometimes in, so France fly is very similar to a Paragon. It's very sleek, so it will sink pretty similar. But today we were fishing a 2 millimeter in this really shallow water where there's fish, and like it was almost sunk too fast. We went to like the same 2 millimeter in a waltz worm, but it was a larger profile and it slowed the sink down. We actually caught a fish right away. So yeah, you know, sometimes that's too fast, you know? Or you could go to a heavier kippet, you know, go from 6 to 5x or 7 to 6x, and that will slow your sink down too. But yeah, all that stuff correlates together and it has importance. Yep, thanks for the question.
Yeah, like I said, we're running short on time, but I'm trying to figure out how to get the most out of you in the least amount of time. I want to talk about casts, and I want you to talk about what you call the drift sequence. So
sure.
I realize that, and a lot of the casts you describe in your book are pretty standard things, you know, anywhere from a bow and arrow cast to, you know, all the casts we should be using in most situations. So maybe it's better to spend our last few minutes talking about the drift sequence and controlling your line.
Yeah, we could do. We could always do it in the future. Sometimes too, talk about a lot of these things again. You know, no problem.
Sure.
But
go ahead. Yeah.
Drift sequence is just something that I while educating anglers, it's something that just will help people know where they are or where the best part of the drift is or where your flies are sinking versus lifting and raising. So a lot of anglers catch their fish with tight lining downstream of their body position. A lot of anglers do. A lot of anglers catch them and they'll see it kind of looking like it's rotating up and they'll say, oh, they're eating it on the rise, which sometimes they are. But what I've learned is right before it starts lifting at the bottom of your drift, that's kind of the slower and the most connected you are to your nymphs. But what happens is when you hook them downstream of you, it's hard to convert those fish to the net because it's a little bit awkward, you know, awkward hook set and, you know, setting upstream and you pull it out of their mouth. But just knowing where you're, you know, the amount of time in what I'd call the better part of your drift is important. So if you're squared up to the water, half of your drift is upstream, and then half of it is downstream. So, you know, you're casting upstream, it's drifting to your body, and that's drifting downstream. Can you kind of picture that? You're drifting.
Sure.
So when
you're
squared to the water. So what I try to explain to anglers in that moment, if you look straight across the stream, half of it is up and half of it is down. So zone one is upstream, zone two is downstream. And most people catch their fish in zone two and tight lining. The reason is because fishing from zone one into zone two is difficult to obtain connection and have good connection. From zone two downstream, the water almost does it for you because you can't push your rod down any farther and it makes connection for you. So it's easy to feel bites. A lot of people feel them down there because it's because you can't. It's hard not to be connected with the nymph because the water is pushing your leaders, creating a loop, and it's swinging or dragging or rotating downstream. So what we want to do in that scenario is try to manipulate our rod maybe a little better and to get it to sink upstream and then maybe start your drift. Or I rotate my, you almost think about this, have your feet square with the water and now rotate them about 30 to 45 degrees upstream. So now that's going to turn my shoulders and now 70% of my drift is upstream and now only 30 is downstream. So now I'm more in that zone that I want to catch fish because I want to catch them upstream in zone one if possible. Because they're not as spooked, your hook set's better, you're sending it into the fish, and then they're coming to you. So it's just a preferred way if you can. And your drift will be better once you can manipulate at a high level up there. But that's really like, you know, it, zone one, zone two, and drift position is just a way for me to teach anglers on where we want to be and how we want to do it. And to fish farther upstream, so you can picture this. So you cast and you stop your rod parallel with your body and you start moving it right away and you it's kind of like maybe a 45 degree angle with your leader. But what I want anglers to try to do is cast and stop their rod and then use their non-dominant hand and just don't move your rod. And as the leader comes down to you, you pull in that line slowly and that leader maybe gets a little more vertical and then you can start your drift downstream. Then once you get good at that, you can cast and push your rod way upstream as you're fishing in that zone one position or that position one of your drift. And you can let that leader rotate under your rod tip, and then right when it gets to the angle that you want, you lock it to that angle, and then you push, then you move your rod tip down the entire way through that drift. So you can fish different rod angles because people kind of just cast, and then they just pull it right away a lot of times. And it's just the same angle over and over. But you can stop, let the leader pendulum under your rod tip a little bit, then start your drift. But you could do it at a high level. If you push your rod way forward upstream, let it rotate under your rod tip, and then start your drift. And it will make you'll be like, my drift is like 5 seconds longer all of a sudden because you slowed it down way upstream. You had better connection. You start catching more fish upstream. That's kind of, you know. But that's really important. And then the second thing we'll talk about really quickly, but I know we're running out of time, but it's called tracking. It's how the fly travels downstream in the lane it's in. So fish are looking upstream, and they want the fly to be up in front of them and come down to them. They want it to come straight down to them most of the time. If bugs are active and they're rising, a rotating drift or drift coming across a little bit is not, it can be good. But we want that fly to track downstream. It's really important. So if you imagine fish sitting there, if that fly is higher in the column, or if it's just rubbing between the rocks, if it's higher up, more fish can actually see it at a more of a distance. One of the reasons why I try to keep my flies high too. You know, but we want to think about how we can get the fly to track downstream straight. Those are kind of the two important things that I just kind of want to leave with. You know, how do you get that fly to track? But that's purpose. You know, people aren't thinking about it. They're like, oh, my angle is this. No. Let's not think about that. Let's think about fish, where they are, how they eat, why they eat, how a bug falls through the current. Grab a bug, drop it in, see how fast it sinks. It doesn't. You know, just think of those things a little bit more and how you can try to fish light flies and try to, you know. But yeah. So, but it's hard.
Yeah.
To
no, see, that's
right? You got to see it in the wild.
No, I think you did really well there, Josh. And I think that's a perfect place to end the show. You just gave away probably some of the best information right here at the end. To getting in contact with the fish.
I want to say this: I do not have the answer, nor will I give it to you. I just want to encourage deeper thinking. No, it's true. I don't have the answer. I don't have the answer, but I know this. Let's think deeper. That's the truth. Let's think deeper, okay? That's my answer. Because I don't have
it. All right.
It changes every day, especially the heck out of me.
Yeah. Yeah. Tomorrow it will be different, right? Yeah.
It sure will be.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Unfortunately, it's time to wrap things up here. But stick with me, Josh, because we're going to give away your book here in just a couple minutes, and we've got a few more things to take care of. We are giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. We're also giving away a copy of Josh's book, Euro Nymphing, Tips, Tactics, and Techniques. courtesy of Stackpole Books. So hang tight, and we'll be right back and give those prizes away. The Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. So visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us some feedback about the show. You can find our link on our homepage under the section under tonight's show. It says, what do you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. So now it's time to give away some prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on a chance to win some of the great prizes we have to offer. If you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show to collect your information so that we can deliver your prize to you. So first, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about Fly Fishers International, go to flyfishersinternational.org. So if you are not the lucky winner tonight, that's where you want to go to learn more and to become a member. Our winner for that is Jay Schoonmaker in West Virginia. So congratulations, Jay. I know you'll enjoy your membership to FFI. And our next winner for the Trout Unlimited membership, and to learn about more about Trout Unlimited, go to tu.org. That's tu.org. And another great organization to support. Our winner for that is Jay Rios in New Mexico. Jay Rios in New Mexico. So congratulations, Jay. I know you'll enjoy your membership as well. So now, we're going to give away a copy of Josh's book, Your Own Nymphing, Tips, Tactics, and Techniques. I'm clearing my queue here. So you'll answer this question on that form on our homepage. And the question is, when the fish aren't biting, but you know they're there, what does Josh do first? Will he change his fly or change his presentation? Which does he do first? Good question, Josh. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a great one.
We'll see if people caught that in when you were talking. Sometimes I ask too easy of a question. Sometimes that's too hard of a question. But we have to wait a minute for them because there's a slight delay before they even hear the question. And then they got to type, and they got to get their hands off the fly tying vise and things like that. So let's see what happens here. And let's see. We have a winner, I think. I'll check with you, Josh. Change presentation.
Absolutely. It's a good starting
Absolutely.
Point.
So that's Al Getz, I think, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, in Hastings, Nebraska. Al, you are proud winner of Josh's book, Your Own Nymphing, Tips, Tactics, and Techniques. So you're going to love it. You're going to love it. So, okay. Al, you need to send me, I've got your name and email address. You need to send me your shipping address so that I can get that book shipped out from Stackpole Books to you. So the first person that answered and got it correct, we've got other correct answers coming in here, too. So, yeah, bunches of them. But Al was fast on the keyboard. So let's see. Yeah. Okay, good. All right. So congratulations, Al. I know you enjoyed the book. I know it's going to help your fishing. And I'm sure you'll be better for it. So enjoy. Josh, hey, thank you so much for being on my show tonight. It's a pleasure to talk to you. You're a wealth of information, and from the way that you talk to us tonight, there's more information to come, right? Always something to learn, and always something to learn, always something to share. So thanks so much for being on my show.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hopefully you've all found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link in the top line of our menu. In the archive, you'll find all of our past shows. I think we've got 399 shows with this one tonight. that you can search by keyword phrase, like tarpon, your own nymphing, snook, whatever you want to search for, you're going to find a show about it. So I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with what you find out there. Our next broadcast will be on May 15th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. On that show, I'll interview Steve Fairley, and our topic for the show will be Conversations with a Bonefish Guide. Steve started fishing the Bahamas with world-famous guide Stuart Clair and caught the bonefish bug. As time passed, he realized that there was so much incredible knowledge that Stuart shared while fishing that it was a shame not to capture it and share it with others. Join us in the conversation that Steve and Stuart had and learn the secrets to fishing for bonefish in the Bahamas. And we'd like to thank tonight Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Stackpole Books, Lee's Ferry Anglers, Ugly Bug Fly Shop, and Enrico Puglisi Flies for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.